I've depended on keeping the initiative. Didn't you fight with us at Odawara, Igarashi-san? He was asking, already knowing that this was where the samurai had lost his eye. Yes, sire. I had the honor. I was with Lord Yabu, and we served on the Taiko right wing. Then you had the place of honor, where fighting was the thickest. I have much to thank you and your master for. We smashed the enemy, Lord. We were only doing our duty. Even though Igarashi hated Toranaga, he was proud that the action was remembered and that he was being thanked. Now they had come to the front of the 1st Regiment. Toranaga's voice carried loudly.
Yes, you and the men of Izu helped us greatly. Perhaps, if it weren't for you, I would not have gained the Kanto. Hey, Yabu-sama?
He added, stopping suddenly, giving Yabu publicly the added title, and thus the added honor. Again, Yabu was thrown off balance by the flattery. He felt it was no more than his due, but he had not expected it from Toranaga, and it had never been his intention to allow a formal inspection.
Perhaps, but I doubt it. The Daiko ordered the Beppu clan obliterated. So it was obliterated.
That had been 10 years ago, when only the enormously powerful and ancient Beppu clan, led by Beppu Genzaimon, opposed the combined forces of General Nakamura, the Taiko-to-be, and Toranaga, the last major obstacle to Nakamura's complete domination of the empire. For centuries, the Beppu had owned the 8 provinces, the Kanto. 150,000 men had ringed their castle city of Odawara, which guarded the pass that led through the mountains into the incredibly rich rice plains beyond. The siege lasted 11 months. Nakamura's new consort, the patrician Lady Ochiba, radiant and barely 18, had come to her lord's household outside the battlements, her infant son in her arms, Nakamura doting on his firstborn child. And with Lady Ochiba had come her younger sister, Genjiko, whom Nakamura proposed giving in marriage to Toranaga.
Sire, Toranaga had said, I'd certainly be honored to lock our houses closer together. But instead of me marrying the Lady Genjiko, as you suggest, let her marry my son and heir, Sudara.
It had taken Toranaga many days to persuade Nakamura, but he had agreed. Then, when the decision was announced to the Lady Ochiba, she had replied at once,
With humility, sir, I oppose the marriage.
Nakamura had laughed.
Ha ha! So do I! Sudara's only 10 and Genjiko 13. Even so, they're now betrothed, and on his 15th birthday, they'll marry.
But, sire, Lord Toranaga's already your brother-in-law, ne? Surely that's enough of a connection? You need closer ties with the Hujimoto and the Takashima, even at the imperial court.
They're dungheads at court, and all in pawn,
Nakamura had said in his rough peasant voice.
Listen, O-chan. Toranaga's got 70,000 samurai. When we smash the Beppu, he'll have the Kanto and more men. My son will need leaders like Yoshi Toranaga, like I need them. Yes, and one day my son will need Yoshi Sudara. Better Sudara should be my son's uncle. Your sister's betrothed to Sudara, but Sudara will live with us for a few years, ne?
Of course, sire. Toranaga had agreed instantly, giving up his son and heir as a hostage.
Good, but listen, first you and Sudara will swear eternal loyalty to my son.
And so it had happened. Then, during the 10th month of siege, this first child of Nakamura had died, from fever or bad blood or malevolent kami.
May all gods curse Odawara and Toranaga,
Ochiba had raved.
It's Toranaga's fault that we're here. He wants the Kanto. It's his fault our son's dead. He's your real enemy. He wants you to die and me to die. Put him to death, or put him to work. Let him lead the attack. Let him pay with his life for the life of our son. I demand vengeance.
So Toranaga had led the attack. He had taken Odawara Castle by mining the walls and by frontal attack. Then the grief-stricken Nakamura had stamped the city into dust. With its fall and the hunting down of all the Beppu, the empire was subdued, and Nakamura became first Kampaku and then Taiko.
but many had died at Odawara.
Too many,
Toranaga thought, here on the Anjiro shore. He watched Yabu.
It's a pity the Taiko's dead, eh?
Yes.
My brother-in-law was a great leader, and a great teacher, too. Like him, I never forget a friend, or an enemy. Soon, Lord Yeamon will be of age. His spirit is the Taiko's spirit. Lord Tora...
But before Yabu could stop the inspection, Toranaga had already gone on again, and there was little he could do but follow. Toranaga walked down the ranks, exuding geniality, picking out a man here, another there, recognizing some, his eyes never still as he reached into his memory for faces and names. He had that very rare quality of special generals who inspect, so that every man feels, at least for a moment, that the general has looked at him alone, perhaps even talked with him alone, among his comrades. Toranaga was doing what he was born to do, what he had done 1,000 times, controlling men with his will. By the time the last samurai was passed, Yabu, Igarashi, and Omi were exhausted. But Toranaga was not, and again, before Yabu could stop him, he had walked rapidly to a vantage point and stood high and alone.
Samurai of Izu, vassals of my friend and ally, Kashigi Yabu-sama, he called out in that vast, sonorous voice. I'm honored to be here. I'm honored to see part of the strength of Izu, part of the forces of my great ally. Listen, samurai, dark clouds are gathering over the empire and threaten the Taiko's peace. We must protect the Taiko's gifts to us against treachery in high places. Let every samurai be prepared. Let every weapon be sharp. Together we will defend his will. And we will prevail. May the gods of Japan, both great and small, pay attention. May they blast without pity all those who oppose the Taiko's orders.
Then he raised both his arms and uttered their battle cry.
Kashigi!
And incredibly, he bowed to the legions and held the bow. They all stared at him. Then,
Toranaga!
Came roaring back at him from the regiments again and again, and the samurai bowed in return. Even Yabu bowed, overcome by the strength of the moment. Before Yabu could straighten, Toranaga had set off down the hill once more at a fast pace.
Go with him, Omi-san.
Yabu ordered. It would have been unseemly for him to run after Toranaga himself.
Yes, lord.
When Omi had gone, Yabu said to Igarashi,
What's the news from Edo? The Lady Yuriko, your wife, said first to tell you there's a tremendous amount of mobilization over the whole Kanto. Nothing much on the surface, but underneath everything's boiling. She believes Toranaga's preparing for war. A sudden attack. Perhaps against Osaka itself.
What about Ishido?
Nothing before we left. That was 5 days ago. Nor anything about Toranaga's escape. I only heard about that yesterday, when your lady sent a carrier pigeon from Edo. Ah, Tsukimoto's already set up that courier service? Yes, sire. Good. Her message read, Toranaga has successfully escaped from Osaka with our master in a galley. Make preparations to welcome them at Anjiro. I thought it best to keep this secret, except from Omi-san. But we're all prepared.
How?
I've ordered a war exercise, sir, throughout Izu. Within 3 days, every road and pass into Izu will be blocked, if that's what you want. There's a mock pirate fleet to the north that could swamp any unescorted ship by day or by night, if that's what you want. And there's space for you here and a guest, however important, if that's what you want.
Good. Anything else? Any other news?
Igarashi was reluctant to pass along news, the implications of which he did not understand.
We're prepared for anything here. But this morning a cipher came from Osaka. Toranaga has resigned from the Council of Regents.
Impossible! Why should he do that?
I don't know. I can't think this one out. But it must be true, sire. We've never had wrong information from this source before.
The Lady Sazuko?
Yabu asked cautiously, naming Torunaga's youngest consort, whose maid was a spy in his employ.
Igarashi nodded.
Yes, but I don't understand it at all. Now the regents will impeach him, won't they? They'll order his death. It'd be madness to resign, eh?
Michigo must have forced him to do it.
But how? There wasn't a breath of rumor. Torunaga would never resign on his own. You're right. That'd be the act of a madman. He's lost if he has. It must be false.
Yabu walked down the hill in turmoil and watched Torunaga cross the square toward Mariko and the barbarian, with Hujiko nearby. Now Mariko was walking beside Torunaga, the others waiting in the square. Torunaga was talking quickly and urgently. And then Yabu saw him give her a small parchment scroll, and he wondered what it contained and what was being said.
What new trickery is Torunaga planning?
He asked himself, wishing he had his wife Yuriko here to help him with her wise counsel. At the dock, Torunaga stopped. He did not go onto the ship and into the protection of his men. He knew that it was on the shore that the final decision would be made. He could not escape. Nothing was yet resolved. He watched Yabu and Igarashi approaching. Yabu's untoward impassivity told him very much.
So, Yabu-san, you will stay for a few days, Lord Torunaga? It would be better for me to leave at once.
Yabu ordered everyone out of hearing. In a moment, the two men were alone on the shore.
I've had disquieting news from Osaka. You've resigned from the Council of Regents?
Yes, I've resigned.
Then you've killed yourself, destroyed your cause, all your vassals, all your allies, all your friends. You've buried Izu, and you've murdered me.
The Council of Regents can certainly take away your fief, and your life if they want.
Yes. By all gods, living and dead, and yet to be born.
Yabu fought to dominate his temper.
I apologize for my bad manners, but your incredible attitude. Yes, I apologize.
There was no real purpose to be gained in a show of emotion, which all knew was unseemly and defacing.
Yes, it is better for you to stay here then, Lord Torunaga. I think I would prefer to leave at once.
Here, O Edo, what's the difference? The regent's order will come immediately. I imagine you'd want to commit seppuku at once, with dignity, in peace. I would be honored to act as your second.
Thank you, but no legal orders yet arrived, so my head will stay where it is.
What does a day or two matter? It's inevitable that the order will come.
I will make all arrangements, yes, and they will be perfect. You may rely on me.
Thank you. Yes, I can understand why you would want my head. My own head will be forfeit, too. If I send yours to Ishido, or take it and ask his pardon, that might persuade him, but I doubt it, ne? If I were in your position, I might ask for your head. Unfortunately, my head will help you not at all. I'm inclined to agree, but it's worth trying.
Yabu spat violently in the dust.
I deserve to die for being so stupid as to put myself in that dunghead's power.
Ishido will never hesitate to take your head, but first he'll take Izu. Oh, yes. Izu's lost with him in power.
Don't bait me. I know that's going to happen.
I'm not baiting you, my friend,
Torunaga told him, enjoying Yabu's loss of face.
I merely said, with Ishido in power, you're lost and Izu's lost, because his kinsman, Ikawa Jikyu, covets Izu, eh?
But, Yabu-san, Ishido doesn't have the power. Yet.
And he told him, friend to friend, why he had resigned.
The council's hamstrung.
Yabu couldn't believe it.
There isn't any council. There won't be until there are 5 members again.
Torunaga smiled.
Think about it, Yabu-san. Now I'm stronger than ever, ne? Ishido's neutralized. So is Jikyu. Now you've got all the time you need to train your guns. Now you own Tsuruga and Totomi. Now you own Jikyu's head. In a few months, you'll see his head on a spike and the heads of all his kin. And you'll ride in state into your new domains.
Abruptly, he spun and shouted,
Igarashi-san!
And 500 men heard the command. Igarashi came running. But before the samurai had gone 3 paces, Torunaga called out,
Bring an honor guard with you! 50 men! At once!
He did not dare to give Yabu a moment's respite to detect the enormous flaw in his argument. That if Ishido was hamstrung now and did not have power, then Torunaga's head on a wooden platter would be of enormous value to Ishido, and thus to Yabu. Or even better, Torunaga bound like a common felon and delivered alive at the gates of Osaka Castle would bring Yabu immortality and the keys to the Kanto. While the honor guard was forming in front of him, Torunaga said loudly,
In honor of this occasion, Yabu-sama, perhaps you would accept this as a token of friendship.
Then he took out his long sword, held it flat on both hands, and offered it. Yabu took the sword as though in a dream. It was priceless. It was a Minowara heirloom and famous throughout the land. Torunaga had possessed this sword for 15 years. It had been presented to him by Nakamura in front of the assembled majesty of all the important daimyos in the empire, except Beppu Genzeimon, as part payment for a secret agreement. This had happened shortly after the Battle of Nagakude, long before the Lady Ochiba. Torunaga had just defeated General Nakamura, the Taiko-to-be, when Nakamura was still just an upstart, without mandate or formal power or formal title, and his reach for absolute power still in the balance. Instead of gathering an overwhelming host and burying Torunaga, which was his usual policy, Nakamura had decided to be conciliatory. He had offered Torunaga a treaty of friendship and a binding alliance, and to cement them, his half-sister as wife. That the woman was already married and middle-aged bothered neither Nakamura nor Torunaga at all. Torunaga agreed to the pact. At once the woman's husband, one of Nakamura's vassals, thanking the gods that the invitation to divorce her had not been accompanied by an invitation to commit seppuku, had gratefully sent her back to her half-brother. Immediately, Torunaga married her with all the pomp and ceremony he could muster, and the same day concluded a secret friendship pact with the immensely powerful Beppu clan, the open enemies of Nakamura, who, at this time, still sat disdainfully in the Kanto on Torunaga's very unprotected back door. Then Torunaga had flown his falcons and waited for Nakamura's inevitable attack. But none had come. Instead, astoundingly, Nakamura had sent his revered and beloved mother into Torunaga's camp as a hostage, ostensibly to visit her stepdaughter, Torunaga's new wife, but still hostage nonetheless, and had, in return, invited Torunaga to the vast meeting of all the daimyos that he had arranged at Osaka. Torunaga had thought hard and long. Then he had accepted the invitation, suggesting to his ally Beppu Genzeimon that it would be unwise for them both to go. Next, he had set 60,000 samurai secretly into motion toward Osaka against Nakamura's expected treachery, and had left his eldest son, Noboru, in charge of his new wife and her mother. Noboru had at once piled tinder-dry brushwood to the eaves of their residence and had told them bluntly he would fire it if anything happened to his father. Torunaga smiled, remembering. The night before he was due to enter Osaka, Nakamura, unconventional as ever, had paid him a secret visit, alone and unarmed.
Well met, Torasan.
Well met, Lord Nakamura.
Listen, we fought too many battles together. We know too many secrets. We've shit too many times in the same pot to want to piss on our own feet or on each other's.
I agree.
Torunaga had said cautiously.
Listen, then. I'm within a sword's edge of winning the realm. To get total power, I've got to have the respect of the ancient clans, the hereditary fiefholders, the present heirs of the Hujimoto, the Takashima, and Minowara. Once I've got power, any daimyo or any three together can piss blood for all I care.
You have my respect. You've always had it.
The little monkey-faced man had laughed richly.
You won at Nagakude, fairly. You're the best general I've ever known, the greatest daimyo in the realm. But now, we're going to stop playing games, you and I. Listen, tomorrow, I want you to bow to me before all the daimyos, as a vassal. I want you, Yoshitora Naga no Minowara, a willing vassal. Publicly. Not to tongue my hole, but polite, humble, and respectful. If you're my vassal, the rest'll fart in their haste to put their heads in the dust and their tails in the air. And the few that don't? Well, let them beware.
That will make you lord of all Japan, eh?
Yes, the first in history. And you'll have given it to me. I admit I can't do it without you, but listen, if you do that for me, you'll have first place after me. Every honor you want, anything, there's enough for both of us.
Is there?
Yes. First I take Japan, then Korea, then China. I told Goroda I wanted that, and that's what I'll have. Then you can have Japan, a province of my China. But now, Lord Nakamura, now I have to submit, ne? I'm in your power, ne? You're in overwhelming strength in front of me, and the Beppu threaten my back. I'll deal with them soon enough, the peasant warlord had said. Those sneering carrion refused my invitation to come here tomorrow. They sent my scroll back covered in bird shit. You want their lands? The whole Kanto?
I want nothing from them or from anyone, he had said.
Liar, Nakamura had said genially. Listen, Tora-san, I'm almost 50. None of my women has ever birthed. I've juice in plenty, always have had. And in my life, I must have pillowed 100, 200 women, of all types, of all ages, in every way. But none has ever birthed a child, not even stillborn. I've everything, but I've no sons, and never will. That's my karma. You've four sons living, and who knows how many daughters. You're 43, so you can pillow your way to a dozen more sons as easy as horses shit. And that's your karma. Also, you're Minowara, and that's karma. Say I adopt one of your sons, and make him my heir.
Now?
Soon? Say in 3 years. It was never important to have an heir before, but now things are different. Our late Master Goroda had the stupidity to get himself murdered. Now the land's mine. Could be mine. Well?
You'll make the agreements formal, publicly formal, in 2 years?
Yes, in 2 years. You can trust me. Our interests are the same. Listen, in 2 years, in public. And we agree, you and I, which son. This way we share everything, eh? Our joint destiny settled into the future, so no problems there, and that's good for you and good for me. The pickings will be huge. First, the Kanto, eh?
Perhaps Beppu Genzeimon will submit, if I submit.
I can't allow them to, Tora-san. You covered their lands.
I covered nothing.
Nakamura's laugh had been merry.
Yes, but you should. The Kanto's worthy of you. It's safe behind mountain walls, easy to defend. With the Delta, you'll control the richest rice lands in the empire. You'll have your back to the sea and an income of 2 million koku. But don't make Kamakura your capital. Or Odawara.
Kamakura's always been capital of the Kanto.
Why shouldn't you covet Kamakura, Tora-san? Hasn't it contained the holy shrine of your family's guardian kami for 600 years? Isn't Hachima the kami of war, the Minowara deity? Your ancestor was wise to choose the kami of war to worship.
I covered nothing, worship nothing. A shrine is just a shrine, and the kami of war's never been known to stay in any shrine.
I'm glad you covered nothing, Tora-san. Then nothing will disappoint you.
Like me in that.
But Kamakura's no capital for you. There are 7 passes into it, too many to defend. And it's not on the sea.
No, I wouldn't advise Kamakura.
Listen, you'd be better and safer to go farther over the mountains. You need a seaport. There's one I saw once, Edo. A fishing village now, but you'll make it into a great city. Easy to defend. Perfect for trade. You favor trade. I favor trade. Good. So you must have a seaport. As to Odawara, we're going to stamp it out as a lesson to all the others.
That will be very difficult.
Yes, but it'd be a good lesson for all the other daimyos, ne?
To take that city by storm would be costly.
Again, the taunting laugh.
Ha ha! It could be, to you, if you don't join me. I've got to go through your present lands to get at it. Did you know you're the Beppu front line? The Beppu pawn? Together, you and them could keep me off for a year or two, even 3. But I'll get there in the end. Oh, yes. Why waste more time on them? They're all dead. Except your son-in-law, if you want. Oh, I know you've an alliance with them, but it's not worth a bowl of horseshit. So what's your answer? The pickings are going to be vast. First, the Kanto. That's yours. Then I've all Japan. Then Korea. Easy. Then China. Hard, but not impossible. I know a peasant can't become shogun, but our son will be shogun, and he could straddle the dragon throne of China, too, or his son. Now, that's the end of talk. What's your answer, Yoshitora Naga no Minowara? Vassal or not? Nothing else is of value to me.
Let's piss on the bargain,
Toranaga had said, having gained everything that he had wanted and planned for. And the next day, before the bewildered majesty of the truculent daimyos, he had humbly offered up his sword and his lands and his honour and his heritage to the upstart peasant warlord. He had begged to be allowed to serve Nakamura and his house forever. And he, Yoshitora Naga no Minowara, had bowed his head abjectly into the dust. The Taiko-to-be now had been magnanimous, and had taken his lands and had once gifted him the Kanto as a fief once it was conquered, ordering total war on the Beppu for their insults to the emperor. And he had also given Toranaga this sword that he had recently acquired from one of the imperial treasuries. The sword had been made by the master swordsmith Miyoshi Go centuries before, and had once belonged to the most famous warrior in history, Minowara. Yoshitomo, the first of the Minowara shoguns. Toranaga remembered that day, and he recalled other days. A few years later, when the Lady Ochiba gave birth to a boy. And another when, incredibly, after the Taiko's first son had conveniently died, Yeimon, the second son, was born. So was the whole plan ruined. Karma. He saw Yabu holding the sword of his ancestor with reverence.
"Is it as sharp as they say?"
Yabu asked.
"Yes." "You do me great honor. I will treasure your gift."
Yabu bowed, conscious that because of the gift, he would be the first in the land after Toranaga. Toranaga bowed back, and then, unarmed, he walked for the gangway. It took all his will to hide his fury and not to let his feet falter, and he prayed that Yabu's avariciousness would keep him mesmerized for just a few moments more.
"Cast off!"
he ordered, coming onto the deck, and then turned shoreward and waved cheerfully. Someone broke the silence and shouted his name, then others took up the shout. There was a general roar of approval at the honor done to their lord. Willing hands shoved the ship out to sea. The oarsmen pulled briskly. The galley made way.
Captain, get to Edo quickly.
Yes, sir.
Toranaga looked aft, his eyes ranging the shore, expecting danger any instant. Yabu stood near the jetty, still bemused by the sword. Mariko and Hojika were waiting beside the awning with the other women. The engine-san was on the edge of the square, where he had been told to wait. Rigid, towering, and unmistakably furious. Their eyes met. Toranaga smiled and waved. The wave was returned, but coldly, and this amused Toranaga very much. Blackthorn walked cheerlessly up to the jetty.
When's he coming back, Mariko-san?
I don't know, Anjinson.
How do we get to Edo?
We stay here. At least, I stay for 3 days. Then I'm ordered there.
By sea?
By land.
And me?
You are to stay here.
Why?
You expressed an interest in learning our language, and there's work for you to do here.
What work?
I don't know. I'm sorry. Lord Yabu will tell you. My master left me here to interpret for 3 days.
Blackthorn was filled with foreboding. His pistols were in his belt, but he had no knives and no more powder and no more shot. That was all in the cabin aboard the galley.
Why didn't you tell me we were staying here? He asked. You just said to come ashore.
I didn't know you were to remain here also, she replied. Lord Toranaga told me only a moment ago, in the square.
Why didn't he tell me then? Tell me himself.
I don't know.
I was supposed to be going to Edo. That's where my crew is. That's where my ship is. What about them?
He just said you were to stay here.
For how long?
He didn't tell me, Anjin-san. Perhaps Lord Yabu will know. Please be patient.
Blackthorn could see Toranaga standing on the quarterdeck, watching shoreward.
I think he knew all along I was to stay here, didn't he?
She did not answer.
How childish it is, she said to herself, to speak aloud what you think. And how extraordinarily clever Toranaga was to have escaped this trap.
Hojiko and the two maids stood beside her, waiting patiently in the shade with Omi's mother and wife, whom she had met briefly, and she looked beyond them to the galley. It was picking up speed now, but it was still within easy arrow range. Any moment now, she knew she must begin.
Oh, Madonna, let me be strong, she prayed,
all her attention centering on Yabu.
Is it true? Is that true?
Blackthorn was asking.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know, Anjin-san. I can only tell you Lord Toranaga is very wise. The wisest man. Whatever his reason, it was good.
She studied the blue eyes and hard face, knowing that Blackthorn had no understanding of what had occurred here.
Please be patient, Anjin-san. There's nothing to be afraid of. You're his favored vassal, and under his...
I'm not afraid, Mariko-san. I'm just tired of being shoved around the board like a pawn, and I'm no one's vassal.
Is retainer better? Or how would you describe a man who works for another or is retained by another for special...
Then she saw the blood soar into Yabu's face.
The guns! The guns are still on the galley! He cried out.
Mariko knew the time had come. She hurried over to him as he turned to shout orders at Igarashi.
Your pardon, Lord Yabu, she said, overriding him. There's no need to worry about your guns. Lord Toranaga said to ask your pardon for his haste, but he has urgent things to do on your joint behalves at Edo. He said he would return the galley instantly, with the guns, and with extra powder, and also with the 250 men you require from him. They'll be here in 5 or 6 days.
What?
Mariko explained patiently and politely again, as Toranaga had told her to do. Then, once Yabu understood, she took out a roll of parchment from her sleeve.
My master begs you to read this. It concerns the Anjin-san.
She formally offered it to him. But Yabu did not take the scroll. His eyes went to the galley. It was well away now, going very fast. Out of range.
What does that matter?
He thought contentedly, now over his anxiety.
I'll get the guns back quickly, and now I'm out of the Ishido trap, and I've Torunaga's most famous sword, and soon all the daimyos in the land will be aware of my new position in the armies of the East, second to Torunaga alone.
Yabu could still see Torunaga, and he waved once, and the wave was returned. Then Torunaga vanished off the quarterdeck. Yabu took the scroll and turned his mind to the present, and to the Anjin-san. Blackthorn was watching 30 paces away, and he felt his hackles rise under Yabu's piercing gaze. He heard Mariko speaking in her lilting voice, but that did not reassure him. His hand tightened covertly on the pistol.
Anjin-san, Mariko called out, would you please come over here?
As Blackthorn approached them, Yabu glanced up from the parchment, nodded in friendly fashion. When Yabu had finished reading, he handed the paper back to Mariko and spoke briefly, partly to her, partly to him. Reverently, Mariko offered the paper to Blackthorn. He took it and examined the incomprehensible characters.
Lord Yabu says you are welcome in this village. This paper is under Lord Torunaga's seal, Anjin-san. You are to keep it. He's given you a rare honor. Lord Torunaga has made you a Hatamoto. This is the position of a special retainer of his personal staff. You have his absolute protection, Anjin-san. Lord Yabu, of course, acknowledges this. I will explain later the privileges, but Lord Torunaga has given you also a salary of 20 koku a month. That is about...
Yabu interrupted her, expansively waving his hand at Blackthorn, then at the village, and spoke at length. Mariko translated.
Lord Yabu repeats that you are welcome here. He hopes you will be content, that everything will be done to make your stay comfortable. A house will be provided for you, and teachers. You will please learn Japanese as quickly as possible, he says. Tonight, he will ask you some questions and tell you about some special work.
Please ask him, what work?
May I advise just a little more patience, Anjin-san? Now is not the time, truly.
All right. Wakarimasu, Anjin-san?
Yabu said. Do you understand?
Hai, Yabu-san. Domo.
Yabu gave orders to Igarashi to dismiss the regiment, then strode over to the villagers, who were still prostrate in the sand. He stood in front of them in the warm, fine spring afternoon, Torunaga's sword still in his hand. His words whipped over them. Yabu pointed the sword at Blackthorn and harangued them a few moments more and ended abruptly. A tremor went through the villagers. Muda bowed and said, Hai, several times, and turned and asked the villagers a question, and all eyes went to Blackthorn.
Wakaremasu ka?
Muda called out, and they all answered,
Hai,
their voices mixing with the sighing of the waves upon the beach.
What's going on?
Blackthorn asked Mariko. But Muda shouted,
Keidei!
And the villagers bowed low again, once to Yabu and once to Blackthorn. Yabu strode off without looking back.
What's going on, Mariko-san?
He, Lord Yabu, told them you are his honored guest here, that you are also Lord Torunaga's very honored retainer, that you are here mostly to learn our tongue, that he has given the village the honor and responsibility of teaching you. The village is responsible, Anjin-san. Everyone here is to help you. He told them that if you have not learned satisfactorily within 6 months, the village will be burnt, but before that, every man, woman, and child will be crucified.
Chapter 31. The day was dying now, the shadows long, the sea red, and a kind wind blowing. Blackthorn was coming up the path from the village toward the house that Mariko had earlier pointed out and told him was to be his. She had expected to escort him there, but he had thanked her and refused, and had walked past the kneeling villagers toward the promontory to be alone and to think. He had found the effort of thinking too great. Nothing seemed to fit. He had doused salt water over his head to try to clear it, but that had not helped. At length he had given up and had walked back aimlessly along the shore, past the jetty, across the square and through the village, up to this house where he was to live now, and where, he remembered, there had not been a dwelling before. High up, dominating the opposite hillside, was another sprawling dwelling, part thatch, part tile, within a tall stockade, many guards at the fortified gateway. Samurai were strutting through the village, all standing talking in groups. Most had already marched off behind their officers, in disciplined groups, up the paths and over the hill, to their bivouac encampment. Those samurai that Blackthorn met, he absently greeted, and they greeted him in return. He saw no villagers. Blackthorn stopped outside the gate that was set into the fence. There were more of the peculiar characters painted over the lintel, and the door itself was cut out in ingenious patterns, designed to hide, and at the same time to reveal, the garden behind. Before he could open the door, it swung inward, and a frightened old man bowed him through.
"Kondonwa, Anjin-san!"
His voice quavered piteously. "Good evening."
"Konbanwa," he replied. "Listen, old man, Onamaika?"
"Namai watashi wa, Anjin-sama? Oh, watashi, Yueki-ya, Yueki-ya."
The old man was almost slavering with relief. Blackthorn said the name several times to help remember it, and added san, and the old man shook his head violently.
"Iye, gomen nasai. Iye-san, Anjin-sama. Ueki-ya, Ueki-ya."
"All right, Ueki-ya." But Blackthorn thought, "Why not San, like everyone else?" Blackthorn waved his hand in dismissal. The old man hobbled away quickly. "I'll have to be more careful. I have to help them," he said aloud. A maid came apprehensively onto the veranda through an open shoji and bowed low.
"Konbanwa, Anjin-san."
"Konbanwa,"
he replied, vaguely recognizing her from the ship. He waved her away, too. A rustle of silk. Hujiko came from within the house. Mariko was with her.
"Was your walk pleasant, Anjin-san?"
"Yes, pleasant, Mariko-san."
He hardly noticed her or Hujiko, or the house, or garden.
"Would you like cha? Or perhaps sake? Or a bath, perhaps? The water is hot."
Mariko laughed nervously, perturbed by the look in his eyes.
"The bathhouse is not completely finished, but we hope it will prove adequate."
"Sake, please. Yes, some sake first, Mariko-san."
Mariko spoke to Hujiko, who disappeared inside the house once more. A maid silently brought three cushions and went away. Mariko gracefully sat on one.
"Sit down, Anjin-san. You must be tired."
"Thank you."
He sat on the steps of the veranda and did not take off his thongs. Hujiko brought two flasks of sake and a teacup, as Mariko had told her, not the tiny porcelain cup that should have been used.
"Better to give him a lot of sake quickly," Mariko had said. "It would be better to make him quite drunk, but Lord Yabu needs him tonight. A bath and sake will perhaps ease him."
Blackthorn drank the proffered cup of warmed wine without tasting it. And then a second, and a third. They had watched him coming up the hill through the slit of barely open shojis.
"What's the matter with him?"
Hujiko had asked, alarmed.
"He's distressed by what Lord Yabu said, the promise to the village. Why should that bother him? He's not threatened. It's not his life that was threatened." "Barbarians are very different from us, Hujiko-san. For instance, the Anjin-san believes villagers are people, like any other people, like samurai, some perhaps even better than samurai."
Hujiko had laughed nervously.
"That's nonsense, ne? How can peasants equal samurai?"
Mariko had not answered. She just continued watching the Anjin-san.
"Poor man,"
she said.
"Poor village."
Hujiko's short upper lip curled disdainfully.
"A stupid waste of peasants and fishermen. Kashigi Yabu-san's a fool. How can a barbarian learn our tongue in half a year? How long did the barbarian Tsuku-san take? More than 20 years, ne? And isn't he the only barbarian who's ever been able to talk even passable Japanese?
No, not the only one, though he's the best I've ever heard. Yes, it's difficult for them, but the Anjin-san's an intelligent man, and Lord Toranaga said that in half a year, isolated from barbarians, eating our food, living as we do, drinking cha, bathing every day, the Anjin-san will soon be like one of us.
Ujiko's face had been set.
Look at him, Mariko-san. So ugly. So monstrous and alien. Curious to think that as much as I detest barbarians, once he steps through the gate, I'm committed. And he becomes my lord and master.
He's brave. Very brave, Ujiko. And he saved Lord Taranaga's life and is very valuable to him.
Yes, I know. And that should make me dislike him less. But, so sorry, it doesn't. Even so, I'll try with all my strength to change him into one of us. I pray Lord Buddha will help me.
Mariko had wanted to ask her niece, why the sudden change? Why are you now prepared to serve the Anjin-san and obey Lord Toranaga so absolutely, when only this morning you refused to obey? You swore to kill yourself without permission, or to kill the barbarian the moment he slept.
What did Lord Toranaga say to change you, Ujiko?
But Mariko had known better than to ask. Toranaga had not taken her into this confidence. Ujiko would not tell her. The girl had been too well trained by her mother, Buntaro's sister, who had been trained by her father, Hiromatsu.
I wonder if Lord Hiromatsu will escape from Osaka Castle, she asked herself, very fond of the old general, her father-in-law. And what about Kiri-san and the Lady Sazuko? Where is Buntaro, my husband? Where was he captured? Or did he have time to die?
Mariko watched Ujiko pour the last of the sake. This cup, too, was consumed like the others, without expression.
Dozo! Sake!
Blackthorn said. More sake was brought, and finished.
Dozo, sake!
Mariko-san,
Ujiko said,
the master shouldn't have any more, ne? He'll get drunk. Please ask him if he'd like his bath now. I will send for Suo.
Mariko asked him.
Sorry, he says he'll bathe later.
Patiently, Ujiko ordered more sake, and Mariko added quietly to the maid,
bring some charcoal fish.
The new flask was emptied with the same silent determination. The food did not tempt him, but he took a piece at Mariko's gracious persuasion. He did not eat it. More wine was brought, and two more flasks were consumed.
Please give the Anjin-san my apologies, Ujiko said. So sorry, but there isn't any more sake in his house. Tell him I apologize for this lack. I've sent the maid to fetch some more from the village. Good. He's had more than enough, though it doesn't seem to have touched him at all. Why not leave us now, Ujiko? Now would be a good time to make the formal offer on your behalf.
Ujiko bowed to Blackthorn and went away, glad that custom decreed that important matters were always to be handled by a third party in private. Thus dignity could always be maintained on both sides. Mariko explained to Blackthorn about the wine.
How long will it take to get more?
Not long. Perhaps you'd like to bathe now. I'll see that sake's sent the instant it arrives.
Did Toranaga say anything about my plan before he left? About the navy?
No, I'm sorry. He said nothing about that.
Mariko had been watching for the telltale signs of drunkenness. But to her surprise, none had appeared, not even a slight flush or a slurring of words. With this amount of wine consumed so fast, any Japanese would be drunk.
The wine is not to your taste, Anjin-san?
Not really. It's too weak. It gives me nothing.
You seek oblivion?
No. A solution.
Anything that can be done to help will be done.
I must have books and paper and pens.
Tomorrow, I will begin to collect them for you.
No, tonight, Mariko-san. I must start now.
Lord Taranaga said he will send you a book. What did you call it? The grammar books and word books of the Holy Fathers.
How long will that take?
I don't know, but I'm here for 3 days. Perhaps this may be a help to you. And Hujiko-san is here to help also.
She smiled, happy for him.
I'm honored to tell you she is given to you as consort, and she...
What?
Lord Taranaga asked if she would be your consort, and she said she would be honored and agreed. She will...
But I haven't agreed.
Please? I'm sorry. I don't understand.
I don't want her, either as consort or around me. I find her ugly.
Mariko gaped at him.
But what's that got to do with consort?
Tell her to leave.
But Anjin-san, you can't refuse. That would be a terrible insult to Lord Taranaga, to her, to everyone. What harm has she done you? None at all. Usagi Hujiko's consent...
You listen to me!
Blackthorn's words ricocheted around the veranda and the house.
Tell her to leave!
Mariko said at once,
So sorry, Anjin-san. Yes, you're right to be angry, but...
I'm not angry,
Blackthorn said icily.
Can't you?
Can't you people get it through your heads? I'm tired of being a puppet. I don't want that woman around. I want my ship back and my crew back, and that's the end of it. I'm not staying here 6 months, and I detest your customs. It's God-cursed terrible that one man can threaten to bury a whole village just to teach me Japanese. And as to consorts, that's worse than slavery. And it's a goddamned insult to arrange that without asking me in advance.
What's the matter now?
Mariko was asking herself, helplessly.
What has ugliness to do with consort? And anyway, Ujiko's not ugly. How can he be so incomprehensible?
Then she remembered Torunaga's admonition.
Mariko-san, you're personally responsible. Firstly, that Yabu-san doesn't interfere with my departure after I've given him my sword. And, secondly, you're totally responsible for settling the Anjin-san docilely in Anjiru.
I'll do my best, sire, but I'm afraid the Anjin-san baffles me.
Treat him like a hawk. That's the key to him. I tame a hawk in 2 days. You've 3.
She looked away from Blackthorn and put her wits to work.
He does seem like a hawk when he's in a rage, she thought. He has the same screeching, senseless ferocity. And when not in a rage, the same haughty, unblinking stare. The same total self-centeredness, with exploding viciousness never far away. I agree. You're completely right. You've been imposed upon terribly, and you're quite right to be angry.
She said soothingly.
Yes, and certainly Lord Taranaga should have asked even though he doesn't understand your customs. But it never occurred to him that you would object. He only tried to honor you as he would a most favored samurai. He made you a hatamoto. That's almost like a kinsman, Anjin-san. There are only about 1,000 hatamoto in all the Kanto. And as to the Lady Hujiko, he was only trying to help you. The Lady Usagi Hujiko would be considered, among us, Anjin-san, this would be considered a great honor.
Why?
Because her lineage is ancient, and she's very accomplished. Her father and grandfather are daimyos.
Of course, she's samurai.
And of course,
Mariko added delicately,
you would honor her by accepting her. And she does need a home and a new life.
Why?
She is recently widowed. She's only 19, Anjin-san, poor girl, but she lost her husband and a son and is filled with remorse. To be formal consort to you would give her a new life.
What happened to her husband and son?
Mariko hesitated, distressed at Blackthorn's impolite directness. but she knew enough about him by now to understand that this was his custom, and not meant as lack of manners.
They were put to death, Anjin-san. While you're here, you will need someone to look after your house. The Lady Hujiko will be...
Why were they put to death?
Her husband almost caused the death of Lord Torunaga. Please can...
Torunaga ordered their deaths?
Yes, but he was correct. Ask her. She will agree, Anjin-san.
How old was the child?
A few months, Anjin-san.
Torunaga had an infant put to death for something the father did.
Yes, it's our custom. Please be patient with us. In some things, we are not free. Our customs are different from yours. You see, by law, we belong to our liege lord. By law, a father possesses the lives of his children, and wife, and consorts, and servants. By law, his life is possessed by his liege lord. This is our custom.
So a father can kill anyone in his house?
Yes.
Then you are a nation of murderers.
No.
But your custom condones murder. I thought you were Christian.
I am, Anjin-san.
What about the commandments?
I cannot explain, truly, but I am Christian and samurai and Japanese, and these are not hostile to one another. To me, they're not. Please be patient with me and with us. Please.
You'd put your own children to death if Torunaga ordered it?
Yes. I only have one son, but yes, I believe I would. Certainly it would be my duty to do so. That's the law, if my husband agreed.
I hope God can forgive you. All of you.
God understands, Anjin-san. Oh, he will understand. Perhaps he will open your mind, so you can understand. I'm sorry. I cannot explain very well, ne? I apologize for my lack.
She watched him in the silence, unsettled by him.
I don't understand you either, Anjin-san. You baffle me. Your customs baffle me. Perhaps if we're both patient, we can both learn. The Lady Hujiko, for instance. As consort, she will look after your house and your servants. And your needs. Any of your needs. You must have someone to do that. She will see to the running of your house. Everything. You do not need to pillow her, if that concerns you. If you do not find her pleasing. You do not even need to be polite to her, though she merits politeness. She will serve you, as you wish, in any way you wish.
I can treat her any way I want?
Yes.
I can pillow her, or not pillow her?
Of course. She will find someone that pleases you, to satisfy your body needs, if you wish, or she will not interfere.
I can treat her like a servant? A slave?
Yes, but she merits better.
Can I throw her out? Order her out?
If she offends you, yes.
What would happen to her?
Normally, she would go back to her parents' house in disgrace, who may or may not accept her back. Someone like Lady Hujiko would prefer to kill herself before enduring that shame. But she... You should know true samurai are not permitted to kill themselves without their lord's permission. Some do, of course, but they failed in their duty and aren't worthy to be considered samurai. I would not kill myself, whatever the shame, not without Lord Torunaga's permission or my husband's permission. Lord Torunaga has forbidden her to end her life. If you send her away, she'll become an outcast.
Why? Why won't her family accept her back?
Mariko sighed.
So sorry, Anjin-san, but if you send her away, her disgrace will be such that no one will accept her.
Because she's contaminated? From being near a barbarian?
Oh no, Anjin-san. Only because she had failed in her duty to you,
Mariko said at once.
She is your consort now. Lord Torunaga ordered it, and she agreed. You're master of a house now.
Am I?
Oh, yes. Believe me, Anjin-san,
You have privileges. And as a Hatamoto, you're blessed. And well off. Lord Taranaga's given you a salary of